Did you see the stylish kids in the riot? Shoveled up like monks at the night on fire, wombles bleed, truncheons and shields. You know I cherish you, my love.
Welcome to Young IPA Podcast. I'm James, this is Pete.
G'day everyone.
Alright, we've got a huge show for you guys coming up. It is the 16th of March and this is episode 51. So the back half of the first 50, or the first 100 I guess. So we're going to be talking to Wall Street Journal editorial board member Mary Kissel. Back on the show, it's awesome. We're going to be talking about the Rex Tillerson firing, a few other foreign policy issues that have come up. Obviously, you guys would have seen the Russia poisoning scandal and also the North Korean talks.
We're going global.
We're going global, both the podcast and our content. We got to pacify the new fans we have from all over the world. So we are also going to be talking to Dan Wild about his new report that came out this week about rising cost of things that the government doesn't touch and, sorry, the things that the government does touch.
That's it. That's a crucial distinction as well.
Crucial, crucial distinction. I really should have got that right. And we're also going to be talking about the upcoming South Australian election and also the, well, I won't spoil it, but there's been an update with Pete's cricket career. Cool. So we'll get into it. So obviously the big news for the IPA this week was a release of Dan's report looking at how government... Pete, I don't want to shock you guys here. Nina, I don't want to shock you either. But everything the government touches makes it more expensive.
Surprisingly. More expensive.
Yes. So Dan has this report looking at the cost of goods over the last 20 years. And it's found that in the last 22 decades, wages have risen just 90%, but the cost of housing has risen by 330%, childcare by 310%, electricity by 215%, insurance by 209%, and education by 174%.
And inflation is like 68% over that period.
Yeah, so everything the government touches is becoming more expensive for people to use.
It's a really good piece of work.
Yeah.
It's got this graph that you can just show your friends and say... Here it is.
Like, here's what the government
this
does, and here's what the free market does.
That's
and you
right.
see how the government goes up in cost and down in free market. So, conversely, so TVs and computing equipment down 92%, motor vehicles down 22%, and household appliances down 18%. So, obviously, you can read that. Sorry, Pete, you were going to say something?
I was going to say something. So, that can be obviously a little bit skewed by the fact that there's been huge technological advances in those sectors.
Yes.
But there's stuff like even personal care, right, which has gone down over that period, which hasn't experienced those... massive technological advances.
Absolutely, yeah.
And even in a free market, you are more likely to get technological advances.
Exactly. So, the take out of the report is that government should reduce tariff and non-tariff barriers. Obviously, I said we'd be talking to Dan about that a lot more, but if you guys want to read it now and you can sort of read over it as we're talking to Dan, that is available on our website. Sorry, Pete, let us also talk Tillerson.
Yeah, well, we'll be talking to our resident American foreign affairs journalist, expert, Mary Kissel, later on. She summarises this really, really well, but I'll briefly go through it. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson was removed by Trump during the week via Twitter. He's replaced by the former head of the CIA, Mike Pompeo. As Mary explains in much more detail, basically this guy, who was meant to be the adult in the room, disagreed with Trump on every single foreign policy issue, so it was only a matter of time before he got sacked. In fact, as I pointed out...
It's usually a bad thing to do, is to disagree with your boss on everything.
Yeah, exactly. And according to James, he was a big flowchart guy, so I'll leave that for
the
interview.
I'm not a huge fan of flowcharts.
He's really not. The new head of the CIA, incidentally, is Gina Haspel, the first ever woman to head the CIA because Trump hates women.
I just don't like flowcharts.
Okay, that's all right. Talk about my gag, that's fine.
No, I did hear your gag, sorry.
And anyway, but interestingly, Donald Trump's pick to head the CIA was actually oversaw a secret prison in Thailand called Cat's Eye, where terrorist suspects were waterboarded, and she was later recorded making orders to destroy... Sorry, she wasn't recorded. She had orders to destroy videotape evidence of that. Anyway, very interesting side note.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll talk about more about that with Mary.
Cool. Okay. And the other thing, I don't want to shock you guys again. I know I shocked you earlier with the other big revelation, but Labor's big new policy is a tax. So just calm down with your surprise there.
Was a removal of tax exemption.
Yeah. So basically... Government, like Labor say the government will get more money out of people, and obviously they try to bill it as Labor's going after the big end of town, like, the rich people,
yeah.
the self-managed supers and we're going to get them. And then obviously Treasury's come out and said, actually, so 610,000 Australians are going to be affected by this and they're going to start losing an average of $1,200 a year. And the most affected is not the big end of town. The most affected is people on incomes of less than $18,200 a year.
That's right. Self-funded retirees. Yeah. People who are making money predominantly off shares. It's weird because they're ahead.
What do you mean?
Why would you do this now? That's my thing. It's like, this is clearly going to bomb.
Yeah.
You know, you're on a good run.
Yeah. Don't ride the boat. Well, I was also going to say, like, I can't wait to see how the Liberals squander this opportunity to get one over Labor. Like, I'm genuinely excited to see how they cost this one. But Pete, I was going to ask you a question. Do you reckon it's a coincidence that the incomes of, so obviously the policy is going after people with less than $18,200 a year. Do you think it's a coincidence that these are also the people who won't make much of a public fuss about it? That's why Labor's going after them.
Look, that's exactly right. As Simon Brady said
on ABC News Breakfast,
he said these people just don't have the same lobbying power that other groups have.
Yeah, so it's like if you go after industry retail funds, like obviously they'll get up in arms, or if you go after like other ones, the banks will get up. But self-managed retirees,
you know, they're kind of diffuse groups spread across society.
Yeah, there's no like central lobby organization. So maybe Labor will get away with it. But if you guys want to read more about this, so Sinclair had an article in The Age this morning. I think it made the front page, and that is available on our website. You can, as Pete alluded to, Breeny was on ABC News Breakfast talking about that. That's available on our YouTube channel and our Facebook page. Cool. So that is it for major news stories this week. So we'll now go to our interviews with Mary and Dan. But before we do that, Nina, we should probably talk about IPA membership.
Yes, if you love what we've done, you love this podcast as well, and you want to support us, please become a member. Just visit our website, ipa.org.au, and click on the join button. And starting as low as $22 per year, you can become a member for a year. And you will receive free 4 editions of IPA reviews and weekly emails every day. Weekly emails, obviously every week.
Cool, and you get to be a part of the Australia's leading voice for freedom. And if you guys like this podcast, thank you guys so much for listening and downloading. We are available on iTunes, SoundCloud, our website, and you can also listen through our Hey What Did I Miss email, which you can subscribe to online. So if you guys are listening on iTunes, make sure to leave us a 5-star rating and the reviews. They're coming in nice and quickly, so that's really cool. Helps us out in the rankings. And make sure, obviously, you're telling your friends and family about the podcast. Try and get them involved as well. Spread the word.
Yeah.
Cool. So we'll now go to our interviews. Okay, we are now joined once again by Wall Street Journal editorial board member Mary Kissel. Mary, welcome back to the show.
Hey, it's great to be with you guys.
Now, every week in the US is a huge week for politics, but this week I think especially quite large. So the Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson, was fired this week. It was pretty big news all over the world. Why do you think he was fired?
Well, I think it's important to put it in a bit of context here because Rex Tillerson was brought in because he was a businessman. In fact, he was introduced to President Trump by Condoleezza Rice, who thought that Tillerson and Trump would, you know, understand each other on some fundamental level because they're similar kind of guys. He wasn't brought in because he had some vision for American power in the world. And so it was almost immediately clear when he started the job that, you know, that's kind of a problem. When you're Secretary of State, you should have some idea of what American diplomacy should achieve. And Tillerson basically got fired because he opposed President Trump on pretty much every major policy issue, from the Paris Climate Pact. Trump withdrew. Tillerson wanted to stay in it. To the Iran nuclear deal. Trump wants out. Tillerson wants to stay in. To talking to North Korea. Tillerson thought it was a good idea. Trump wanted to exert maximum pressure. And I think the lesson here is that you got to come in with a plan, and if you disagree with your boss, better do that in private, not in public.
The way you've described it, it actually seems amazing that he lasted so long in the Trump administration.
I know.
Especially considering the amount of people that have left.
Yeah, exactly. He's not afraid to let him go. Is finding out that you're fired on Twitter the worst way to find out you've been sacked, particularly such a high-profile position?
You know, it kind of reminds me of that Sex in the City episode where Carrie finds out that the boyfriend is broken up with her by post-it note on her door, which, by the way, is all of those episodes are based on real life, so I'm sure that has actually happened here in New York City where I'm sitting right now.
Someone has definitely been broken up with post-it note.
Definitely. Now, look, I mean, it's a pretty crappy way to treat a member of your cabinet. We said that in our editorial on the firing. But, you know, then again, you know, Rex Tillerson did not exactly stand up for Trump. Recall his reaction to the Charlottesville terrible situation there where a young lady was killed after rioting. It happened on both sides. Trump said as much, and Rex basically said, well, you know, the president kind of speaks for himself. Not the smartest thing to do. I think that the bigger failing of Tillerson is that he failed even on the most basic measure on which he was hired, which was that he was supposed to be some great executive who ran a Fortune 100 company and was going to rework the State Department. And he came in with all these flow charts of how he was going to, you know, make the State Department run better, and he couldn't even do that. I think 8 out of the 9 top positions are vacant, and we don't even have ambassadors in places like, Germany, Turkey, Saudi Arabia, South Korea. I mean, part of that isn't his fault. The Senate has to approve some of these people. But at the same time, I think he was a disaster from beginning to end.
So to get this right, a person who was hired and brought in flowcharts about how everything is going to run better and increase synergy didn't pan out.
Yeah, no. Are you surprised?
Yeah, I know. Tillerson did sort of have the vibe. I mean, in a few of the sort of career obituaries that are being written about him, it's sort of the idea that he was like one of the adults in the room of the Trump administration. I know you're not a huge fan of him. So do you reckon like they'll miss any part of the Tillerson experience?
You know, I'm really glad that you raised that. Both Rex Tillerson at State and Secretary of Defense General Mattis, have been characterized that way as the quote-unquote adults. What they actually did was prevent other members of the cabinet and the kind of the higher-level members of the administration from giving Trump good advice. And I'll give you one example of that. Syria is a complete and utter mess. Trump has continued Obama's policy. Jim Mattis and Rex Tillerson were the two guys in the Oval Office telling Trump, you know, you can't be too aggressive there in Syria. I know you want to punish them for using chemical weapons, but, you know, we don't want to start a war with Russia. So give Russia notice before you bomb the airport from which they launched that attack. And, you know, stop there. And, you know, I think that was the wrong decision for a lot of reasons. There are other examples. I won't bore you with them. But, you know, it could be that U.S. foreign policy will function more coherently and efficiently with that roadblock of Tillerson gone.
Well, let's talk about the future now for foreign policy in America. What do you make of the replacement, former director of the CIA, Mike Pompeo?
Terrific pick. Pompeo, first in his class at West Point, Harvard Law grad, ran a couple of businesses for about a decade, then served in Congress from Kansas. Trump picked him to be his CIA director. He has revitalized that agency after years and years of being attacked by the political class in Washington. Remember that President Obama threatened to sue and prosecute CIA agents for doing things that were legal that he wanted to retroactively make illegal. I mean, think about working in an agency like that. So to have a guy like Pompeo come in, it was great. He ran an aggressive CIA, which is important and good. And he also personally briefed President Trump in the Oval Office every single day, and he established a really good rapport with him. Pompeo's a guy who's politically savvy. He's got a lot of connections on Capitol Hill. And I think that his closeness to the president is important because he needs to advocate for states' priorities, something that Tillerson could never do. And most importantly, I think he's really in sync with people like UN Ambassador Nikki Haley, with people like H.R. McMaster, who is for now our national security advisor. And I think they're realists, and I think they will You know, they're not going to encourage Trump to, you know, drop a bomb on North Korea, but I don't think Trump wants to do that. I think that they realize that you have to reestablish U.S. deterrence in the world, and I think they'll speak with one voice. I think Pompeo is very qualified. I think he'll make a great Secretary of State.
Well, it's good that he comes along at this time then, because we're in a pretty intense time in foreign policy, especially with Theresa May accusing Russia of poisoning the former spy Sergei Skripal. What is Pompeo going to do, and where do you sort of see this whole affair going with Theresa May in the House of Commons saying that Russia needs to explain itself over this? And then Trump two days ago saying that he thinks it's likely Russia did it as well.
Yeah, well, I think we can collectively characterize the U.S., U.K., U.N. response to Putin's aggressions, be it the chemical weapons attack on British soil earlier this month, and you know the 2016 presidential meddling. The U.S. just announced sanctions about that today. I think you can characterize all of that as pretty weak. I mean, here's a guy who has used a WMD not once, but twice at least that we know of on British soil. He's propped up Syria's dictator. He's meddled in our elections. He's invaded other countries in Ukraine and Georgia. And, you know, what did we do? Britain expelled, 23 spies and said the royal family isn't going to go to the World Cup in Russia next year? I mean, come on. That's just absurd.
Well, I think Prince William was really looking forward to it. But that might be more.
Oh, please. I mean, I'm sure Putin's feelings are really hurt, but it's not going to deter him. You know, the goal here needs to be to deter him from future aggression. And this is a fun fact. Did you know that the U.S. Treasury and Congress have never sanctioned Putin personally? I think that is insane. It's just amazing. I think until they start doing that, he's going to keep attacking us and seeing how far he can go. And, you know, you guys are right. It is a really, really a dangerous thing to let this guy kind of run amok in the world, because someday, you know, he may do something that would provoke a very large war. And I think, you know, we should do everything that we can do to prevent that from happening.
Mary, what should Australia's response be to this kind of incident?
Well, I think Australia can help on a number of fronts. The first is just rhetorically joining in to denounce him is a good first step. Notice that Australia was not one of the countries that made that UN statement against the Salisbury nerve agent attack today. They could have signed on to that. The Australia has a very, very good intelligence service. I'm sure that as part of the Five Eyes that they are informing the U.S. and the U.K. on activities that they're picking up, be it cyber or, you know, human intelligence. But I ultimately think that the key to deterring Putin is to start seizing the property and financial assets of Putin himself and Russians who are close to him, because Putin's grip on power depends entirely on keeping the people around him rich and happy. And if we threaten that, then we're really threatening his power. And that's the only way I think we're ever going to get him to back down.
Righto, let's talk about North Korea for a second. Trump's announced he's accepting
more light topics.
Yeah, another one. He's accepting North Korea's invitation to talks. Where did this come from, and what do you hope to get out of it from a U.S. perspective?
You know, I'm kind of wondering if North Korea really offered talks or not. We haven't seen a letter. All we have is the word of
have we seen
the
a post-it
South
note?
Korean. Yeah, I mean, there isn't even a post-it note. I mean, all we really have is the word of the South Korean government that they wanted this to happen, and then Trump's kind of impetuous, quick response. And notice that the North Koreans haven't said anything in the last couple of days since Trump said that he would agree to talks. So I don't know. Maybe that's just sort of a crazy thought, but it does occur to me, given, you know, the weird way that this has all kind of come about. But let's assume that they did offer talks. I think it's important to realize that if a U.S. president met the North Korean dictator anywhere under any terms, that is a concession, because not only does it say to the North Koreans, we recognize you as a legitimate power, which is something that they want for the propaganda value of it. It also concedes and gives the North Koreans more time to develop weapons. And we know they have nukes and chemical weapons. They probably have biological weapons too. And it also concedes that there's something to discuss, which is bizarre, right? Because the North Koreans have shown no evidence whatsoever that they are slowing their march toward a nuclear-tipped ICBM or that they're stopping their chemical weapons proliferation to places like Syria. So, you know, we came out on our editorial page against talking to them, and we'll see what comes of it. But it's a very, very scary, worrying time.
Yeah. If it were to happen, where would you hold the talks if you were put as producer? Because like, there's a lot of like, oh, New York's too risky for North Korea, North Korea's too risky for Trump.
I don't know. Right. I mean, I guess you'd put it in a place where you wouldn't care if it went away. So,
yeah.
I don't know, maybe Berkeley, California. I mean, I don't really know. it's kind of hard to say.
Yeah, I'll offer up. We've got this, like, I just moved house. We've got this, like, really nice room out the back, which is, like, this really peaceful area. You can just go have a wine. So if they need a nice, peaceful area that's going to, like, calm everyone down, I'll offer up that. Also, obviously, Trump's team for these talks is going to need, you know, a lot of calm heads in the room if this does go ahead. So is there any word on whether Dennis Rodman is going to be a part of these talks? I know he's got the ear of both camps. Could he be the calm head that we need in this pretty trying time?
Yeah, no. Look, I think it's really, really good that Mike Pompeo is going to be one of the people who briefs the president before these talks. Because, look, I mean, the guy was just running the CIA. If there's anybody in the world that can gauge how insincere, like utterly insincere, the North Koreans are about giving up their nukes and all the nefarious things that they do, he is probably the best guy in the world to explain that to the president, because he's seen all the super top secret, ultra classified intelligence.
Absolutely. I know you're very flippant about this, but I'm 100% sure Dennis Rodman is going to try and get himself into these talks. Like, that'll happen. The last question we got here. So the other big news, and it's crazy that, like, this major economic policy is only coming out in the 14-minute mark of this chat. But the other big news out of the U.S. recently has been the tariffs that have been announced on aluminium and steel. Why is Trump doing this and pursuing this policy? And what's the sort of flavor in the U.S. about their reaction to it?
Well, Trump did it, I think, and I can't speak for him, but just based on what we've seen, he likes to fulfill his campaign promises, and he truly believes in trade protectionism, that some trade is unfair, and you need to equalize the playing field, level the playing field. And you know what? In terms of places like China, he's not necessarily wrong. I think the concern we have here at the editorial page is that the way that he's trying to address things like, you know, using Chinese state banks to subsidize Chinese steel production, or, you know, hit them for intellectual property rights violations, you know, to do that with tariffs hurts the U.S. consumer and will put, you know, a lot of Americans out of jobs. And I think, you know, Trump has been, or at least we've been told by our sources, that Trump has been really surprised at the blowback, and he's been very concerned at the way that our stock market has dropped. So, look, he's a deal maker. He said in The Art of the Deal, right, he likes to punch people in the face and then see how they react. You know, he could view something like steel tariffs as a negotiating tool, right?
Yeah, hopefully he doesn't have that same tactic for North Korea.
Right. But you've seen him start to make carve-outs. He exempted Mexico and Canada already, as he said, in exchange for doing something on NAFTA. They're currently in negotiations, the three countries. He's talking to Europe about maybe getting some relief on their agricultural tariffs in exchange for not including them in the steel tariffs. So, you know, again, from Trump's mind, it may be a negotiating tool. We just think here at the editorial page that it's a very, very risky tool. Because, it hurts the U.S. economy, hurts job creation, and there's always the risk that we could get into a trade war. And that would be pretty terrible for every economy around the world.
Righto, Mary. One more question. We heard that you went out on the town in New York City with Stu Eaton and Evan Mulholland a few weeks ago. I just want to make sure the boys behaved themselves and didn't get too drunk.
No, they were great, but I took them to sing Broadway show tunes, which I'm not sure that they... Did you know that they are avid Broadway fans?
Well, we found out once they got back.
I've been to karaoke with Evan before, and the man loves his Broadway tunes.
Yeah, I'm telling you, the guy can sing. It's very impressive.
Oh, yeah.
There you go.
Blow out a microphone as well. But anyway, Mary, thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Always a pleasure, guys.
Thanks, Mary.
Okay, we're now joined by IBA Research Fellow Daniel Wild. Welcome back to the show, Daniel.
Hi, thanks for having me again.
Yeah. Wonderful haircut, which you can't see.
Yeah, great radio there, Pete. Now, big week for Daniel this week. So obviously we alluded to it at the start of the show. Dan's new report talking about pricing. So do you want to just run us through what the report's talking about and what you found?
Yeah, sure. So the report's looking at changes to prices and a bunch of different household essential services and products. So things like housing, education, motor vehicles, things of that nature. And what it finds is that in a lot of the sectors that are heavily regulated by government and that are heavily subsidised, those prices have been rising very rapidly. So housing's increased by about over 300% over the last 20 years. Electricity's been over 200%. Childcare's been about 300% increase over 20 years as well. And that's been because government regulation reduces competition. That reduces the sort of the pressure there exists on businesses to keep prices down. But what's also interesting to look at is the fact that a lot of market-based sectors, which are relatively free of government interference, have seen prices declining over the last 20 years. And so what the report basically recommends is we need governments to be reducing the amount of intervention in markets to increase competition and to put downward pressure on prices.
Yeah, so, you kind of alluded to it there, but my next question was, so you do see a link between government getting involved in something and that service immediately becoming worse off for the Australian consumer?
Yeah, it's hard to believe, but...
Blow me down with a feather.
That's what happens. And the problem is it gets stuck in these kind of cycles. So childcare is a great example of governments increasing regulation in the childcare sector. So there's these things like qualification requirements, minimum child to staff ratios and other such things, and that increases the cost because as a business now, it's more expensive to run a childcare centre, so something that gets passed on to high fees. And at the same time, governments subsidise the fees for parents to pay for childcare, and then those subsidies just drive up demand as well. So you have limiting supply, which increases prices. You have, and as a result of those prices going up, governments increase subsidies. So then parents have more money to spend on childcare. So they spend more money on childcare and that pushes up prices again. So you end up in this cycle of never ending prices, but the quality or the quantity doesn't go up.
Yeah.
And of course, it's all connected as well because these childcare centres have to pay more for the buildings they're in because of construction costs and they have to pay more for electricity and stuff like that. During the same period, wages went up by 90%.
That's right.
And
inflation was about, I think, 70%.
Yeah, 68%, I think.
68% for inflation, yeah.
I would like to know who made this graph, because to me, this graph is excellent. It's an excellent graph.
Yeah, Peter's really hung up on this graph.
If you people out there, get the graph.
It's unavailable on our website once again.
Well, yeah. I mean, I made the graph, and I got the idea of the one of our counterpart think tanks in the US, the American Enterprise Institute, that did a similar analysis, so that's why they're sourced in there, because I took it from them.
I just think it's a fantastic resource that you can show your friends.
Another one I want to unpack. So we unpack childcare. Now, this is coming from a guy who just saw his rent in Greece, so it's obviously quite close to my heart. Mm. But cost of housing and cost of construction, they're also going up significantly. And this is interesting because I think Australia is like has the second lowest population density in the entire world.
Right.
But our housing is actually extremely expensive.
Yeah.
Why is that?
Well, the things you touched on, a lot of the regulation and red tape on housing. So there's a lot of zoning, planning and zoning laws that make it more expensive to use housing. There's a whole, I mean, if you want to build a new house, there's a whole range of laws, energy efficiency laws. A new house has to have a certain amount of glass on it to get a certain amount of natural light. I mean, these things just go on and on and on. And these adds hundreds of thousands of dollars to this construction of a new house. And then there's also demand pressures. I mean, particularly in Melbourne and Sydney, there's been a lot of immigration over the last 10 years, and that's bolstered demand. And this is really concentrated in certain areas. So again, you have the coincidence of supply constraints and demand increasing, and these are causing your rent to go up, basically.
Absolutely. Yep.
So let's talk about the political aspect of this for a second, because one of the reasons why these costs go up, like if you talk about something like childcare, people go, oh yeah, let's help the let's help the families with childcare. That's a great idea. Not understanding how that runs through economically. Is there anyone in the government that you are aware of that's capable of telling the story of why this is a bad thing and why how we can rectify it?
No.
Okay. Next question.
Paddo?
Well, he's not in the Senate.
Tim Wilson? Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, look, I mean, there probably are people there that are capable of doing it. Certainly Senator Patterson is, although he's in the Senate, not in the government technically. But they don't, I mean, they don't get out there and make these arguments because they are difficult to make, because the obvious retort to saying, you know, regulation's a problem is, oh, you don't want children to be safe. It's like, well, I mean, they're not related issues, because the implicit assumption is that regulation will improve the safety of children. That's not necessarily the case. We know that competition is a great thing to improve quality and safety, and ultimately it should be the choice of parents where they want to send their children to childcare. So some parents may not be as concerned with the qualifications that a childcare staff has. Others would be. I mean, the market should provide whatever they want, and they should be free to send their children to whatever childcare facility they feel like, not a bureaucrat telling them where to go.
Absolutely. So once again, if you guys do want to read this report, it's available on our website, and yeah, you can just download it off the front page. You can download Pete's favourite graph he's ever seen.
It's such a good graph.
Cool. So we'll move on. So Dan, one of our resident South Australians of the office, so South Australia about to go to the polls.
Yep.
What is the lowdown on what's going to happen? What are the major policy positions of the two parties? I know you've got an article out in The Australian, I believe it is, today.
That's right, yep.
Yeah, about renewable energy.
Yeah, look, the election's really all about energy. We know that electricity prices have been skyrocketing around the country, but in South Australia, they've been particularly bad. As I say in the op-ed, the prices have increased by 260% in South Australia over the last 4 years, which is over 40 times the growth to average wages. Mm. So it's having a massive effect on their business investment. It's declined by close to 30% over the past year. People are fleeing the state to take up brighter prospects on the eastern seaboard. So it's a massive problem in South Australia. Now, the key driving issue there is the renewable energy target at the state level, which is 50% renewables by 2025. Labor's proposed to actually go up to 75% by 2025.
So they're getting the vibe off their constituents that they want more renewables and higher costs.
Doubling down on that. So, and for their part, the Liberals have promised to abolish the renewable energy target, which is a great idea, which means the state will just revert to whatever the national target is. So it's really a referendum on renewable energy and on essentially the economic prospects of South Australia as a viable destination for businesses to invest in. Because, I mean, there's just some crazy examples. I mean, I go through a couple in the op-ed, but they're just everywhere. So there was a recycling business in Kilburn, which is one of the suburbs in Adelaide, that it had to close after 38 years, putting 35 people out of work because their monthly electricity bill increased from $80,000 to $180,000.
Whoa.
That's just insane. Small businesses can't absorb a $100,000 hit to the electricity prices.
Per month.
Mm. And when you're talking about a period where wages are stagnant and falling behind, one of the reasons is because any income that businesses are getting, more and more of that's going to paying the bills rather than paying staff. So,
yeah, but you are aware that renewable energy makes rich people feel good about themselves.
Yeah, well, there is a value.
Have you considered that, Daniel?
Have you? Yeah,
I have. I've considered it carefully, and in fact, I've crunched the numbers on on that and
on happiness.
On happiness. No, but the point about you know, the environment's good because I love the environment and it's getting out and, you know, in the environment, but these things don't do anything to improve the environment. So Australia accounts for 1.5% of carbon emissions on a global scale, which means we count for basically next to nothing. We could completely deindustrialize and there would be no noticeable difference to the climate.
Yeah.
So these are all pain and no gain.
Absolutely. So do you reckon who's favourite to win in your books?
I think Labor would still be favourite to win.
Good Lord.
Despite all that. I can't explain it.
What? Oh, sorry. I was just going to say, why is that? But you said you couldn't explain it.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, honestly.
But if you were to try to explain
it. Liberals are just hopeless? Or?
Well, I think a part of it was, so at the last election, for example, Liberals won a decent percent more of the total vote. But because of the way the gerrymandering took place, they weren't able to win. I'm not sure if that's been rectified, but I know it's historically been very hard for them to win, even though they may have a majority support.
The Clinton effect.
The Clinton effect, yep.
Cool. So we'll move on to another topic. Something near and dear to your hearts and me, just sort of a passing interest, I guess. Pete's already left. Some of our listeners might have been following with interest Dan's inclusion into the Deep Deaners, I think they're called.
Deep Dean Uniting, yeah.
Yeah.
Deaners for short.
Say it a bit faster.
Deep Dean United.
Pete can't get through the segment quick enough. But Dan was part of Pete's cricket team. Now, something happened on the weekend, and I want to get to the bottom of what it was.
So, Dan, you
gentlemen.
Oh, okay. Well, so just for clarity, Pete plays in the first 11. I'm down in the third 11. And we were both fortunate enough to make the semi-finals. And we both got absolutely smashed.
Ooh,
both our teams got smashed.
Fell well short.
Played like cowards. Played like cowards.
That was the vibe I got from Pete last night over beers.
Yeah,
it was disappointing.
It's very disappointing. I don't want to say something.
Cowards, I think you referred to yourself as.
I don't want to say something that I can't take back. So let's just move on. No, very disappointing. Great season. But missed out on the weekend.
And Pete, we should say congratulations to Pete for captaining the Wands. That's a pretty good achievement.
Should we?
Well, you know, but started in the twos, get to the ones, captain the ones. It's a pretty good achievement.
It's been a personal journey.
Personal journey for Peter.
All right. Well, that's all you could ask for in park cricket. It's a personal journey.
Yeah.
The laughs, the memories.
Yeah, that's true. Look, we had a good time.
Yeah.
We've still got an interseason trip coming up. So
you got the gala.
Got the gala.
You got the presentation.
Got heaps of stuff.
And you got the end of season trip on a boat.
Come on, Pete.
Next season, eh?
Next season,
we'll
be back.
Yeah.
I believe in you. You doing footy this year?
Oh, mate, yeah, I think so.
Yeah, that'll get the stick.
My brother was meant to organise it, but he got injured in the semi-finals, so now he's not that keen to organise it.
Did he play cricket?
Yeah, did his hammy. He's 34.
Good Lord. All right, cool. Dan, thank you so much for joining
us.
Cool,
thanks, guys. Cheers.
Okay, thank you to Mary and Daniel for those interviews. A lot of fun. Cool. So we'll now run through some stories that we found funny over the course of the week. Obviously, we'll start off with our favourite segment, the Q&A clap of the week. Now, Hillary Clinton is on a global tour. She's coming out to Australia in a few weeks' time. So get your tickets now.
Get your tickets.
It does seem to be a global tour of here are the people who lost the election for me. She just gets to sit there and say, I should have won if not for these other circumstances.
Yeah.
Which sounds like the best use of time. Like, I would love to go on a world tour just talking about how other people have done me wrong.
My failings.
But how none of them are my fault. Yeah. Like, that sounds like the best 8 months of my life.
Yeah. Out of work steel workers. It's their fault. What can I ask you a question?
Absolutely.
Under what guise is this tour taking place?
Just an evening. Like, it's built in Melbourne as an evening with Hillary Rodham Clinton.
Right.
And it just seems to be like...
What a way to while away an evening.
probably still a little bitter. And so here's the quote, which is this week's Q&A clap of the week. Now, it's a long quote, and I apologize, but it's just too good to cut.
So she's been in India this week.
Yes. So this is her in India talking about why she lost the election.
If you look at the map of the United States, there's all that red in the middle where Trump won. Now, I win the coasts. I win, you know, Illinois and Minnesota, places like that. But what the map doesn't show you is that I won the places that represent 2/3 of America's gross domestic product. So I won the places that are optimistic, diverse, dynamic, moving forward, and his whole campaign, Make America Great Again, was looking backwards. You know, you didn't like black people getting rights. You don't like women, you know, getting jobs. You don't want to, you know, see that Indian American succeeding more than you are. Whatever your problem is, I'm going to solve it.
Okay. Thank you.
I can't believe she lost.
Yeah, I can't believe she struggled to relate to regular people.
She's like, look at the map. Look, all the rich people voted for me and the poor people didn't because they're stupid. That's why they're poor.
Yeah, she also said later in the thing that white women who voted for Trump did so because their husbands or kids told them to.
That's just any woman that doesn't agree with me mustn't know her own head.
Yes, exactly. But she's a candidate for women, Pete. Yeah.
Anyway,
sorry, we thought, obviously, Q&A clap of the week. If you're new to the segment, Pete and I do get jealous when people on Q&A get just empty left-leaning opinions applauded on Q&A, because we very rarely get our opinions applauded by strangers.
Except for Simon Brady's excellent point about energy.
Yes, a few weeks ago, Simon actually did get his own Q&A clap, and we were all flabbergasted, none more so than he. So what we're going to do is just read out our own opinions and basically give ourselves a Q&A clap out of pure jealousy. So, Pete, why should you have won something?
Well, as we mentioned in the interview with Daniel Wilde, I lost my cricket semi-final on the weekend.
Yep.
But if you look at the two teams, you would see that my teammates and myself are more optimistic and dynamic than our opponents. And even though they were much better than cricket than us and they smashed us, we deserve to win for that reason.
Mm. Can I just... Okay. Thank you.
It's very noble of you, Pete. Mine is also sport related, so obviously a huge NBA fan, and my the team I go for, the Denver Nuggets, really fighting it out for that last little spot in the playoffs. Not looking too good for us after a loss to the Los Angeles Lakers.
The New Jays.
So the Los Angeles Lakers defeated the Denver Nuggets, but I would like to say that if you looked at the nets on the basketball rim, they were really short and it just would have thrown people off. They were just weirdly short. And also there was a hockey game earlier that day and you can watch the game and the ball is slipping out of players' hands. So I just don't think they were fair playing grounds, much like the Electoral College was for Clinton. So Denver should have won.
Okay. Thank you.
That was really brave, James.
Yeah, that hurt a lot.
All right, so...
I was in a bad mood for the rest of the day after that one.
Speaking of... speaking of celebrities saying silly things, Arnold Schwarzenegger, former governor of California, has said during the week that he wants to sue oil companies for first-degree murder. What did he say? He thinks... Oh, no, sorry, I got mixed up then. Yeah, he wants to sue oil companies. Sue an oil twice in a row is hard. For first-degree murder because, you know, like tobacco companies, it is hard.
It's not that hard. Like, sue an oil.
It's just like, oh, you know, tobacco companies knew they were killing people, and so do oil companies, and every car and petrol pump in the world should have a warning on it. Good on you, Arnie. I know I said this yesterday, and hey, what did I miss? But I think it's such a good gag that I'm going to go with it again. How would you send a cyborg assassin back through time using wind power, Arnie? Get your head in the game, son.
That's a good gag, Pete. Yeah, so I think Arnie officially has to stop calling himself a Republican. This is my big theory. Like, he was a Republican governor of California. He might have already disowned it, who knows, but at this point you have to stop doing it. I also like, yeah, as you alluded to, everything that is made with fossil fuels should have a warning label on it. How are we going to make all these warning? Like, there are so many warning labels.
Literally everything is.
There are so many warning labels. But it's not even stuff that's made from fossil fuels. It's like stuff that is made from stuff that has fossil fuels.
Yeah.
So anything that has oil, anything that needed petrol to be made. And like the invisible hand theory, like if a truck gives you online shopping, does the online shopping, because it was delivered by truck, which uses petrol, does that need a warning label?
Well, the warning labels need warning labels.
Yeah, exactly.
And what's the environmental footprint of these warning labels?
It's like a babushka doll of warning labels, just because that tiny warning label would need its own warning label. I like it.
Yeah, yeah.
Now I'm a fan.
Arnie, you've lost it, mate. Yeah, Morgan Begg, actually, so we were just sort of tossing around this in, hey, he sent me an email yesterday. I'm going to read out part of it because I just want to give you an indication of how keen Morgan was about, you know, Arnie and Terminator. And he wrote, how the T-1000 could be destroyed. What are we trying to say here? How the T-1000 could be destroyed by wind power or powered by it or how it's sent back in time? One thing is for sure. This is an email. One thing is for sure. Fossil fuels was surely a major factor in Skynet taking over the world.
Sorry, Morgan.
Thank
Pro,
you, Morgan, Arnie? You massive nerd. I don't even know what that means.
Oh, come on. Terminator 2 is still the greatest action movie of all time. Maybe Mad Max Fury Road.
No, do you understand? Do you understand that email?
Not even a
The T-1000.
There you go. Guys, one, democracy.
That's not nerdy. That's like action movies. Action movies aren't nerdy.
But just the serious way he goes, fossil fuels was surely a major factor in Skynet taking over the world.
Oh, Morgan is adorable when he takes a very serious position on very lighthearted things, much like Andrew Bushnell. Other things I want to say about this, Arnold Schwarzenegger, by the way, single-handedly brought the Humvee into existence.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, come on, mate.
Yeah. That was his thing.
I got a stat here. Humvees sold 20,000 Humvees were sold in 2002, and then when he really started getting involved, it went up to 71,000 globally in 2006.
Slap a warning label on your forehead, mate.
There's enough space for it.
Oh, wow. Getting personal.
Look, I'm allowed to say it. I've got a big head as well, but I've got a giant head.
Anyway, carry on.
I've got a large head. What do you want?
Carry on, James.
So we'll move on. So now, we all talk about how the nanny state is infantilizing us, turning us into children, and that may be because they are children themselves. So this story came out of Colorado this week. Sorry, in the Denver suburbs, so obviously close to my heart, being a fan of the Denver Nuggets, the Denver Broncos, and the Colorado Rockies. In the Denver suburbs, some precocious youngsters... Nina fell asleep. In the Denver suburbs, some precocious youngsters have achieved the ultimate form of political expression by getting nitpicky smoking restriction passed into law. So Girl Scout Troop 60789 drafted an ordinance banning people from smoking or vaping in their cars if a minor is present. The city council approved the measure 6-5. So a Girl Scout troop is like, we don't like vaping and we're going to get it banned. And then the city council is like, well, you know, participating in the democratic process, we are going to help you pass a nanny state law, just instructing the next generation of paternalistic ninnies.
Well, look, as if 9-year-old girls understand addiction. Look, for a start, we say congratulations. Good on you for getting involved in the political process. That's a good sign. That's good for democracy. But the council doesn't have to pass your laws. And whilst this might seem like a fairly kind of, benign sort of thing, according to Reason, violating the Scout-sponsored law exposes people to penalties that include fines as high as $2,650 and a year in jail. If they do it, heaps and heaps of times.
So here's what I like about the story. As you say, but what actually happened was the Troop 60789 initially suggested fines of $150 for the first violation and then 50 more for any subsequent. Mm. And then the politicians come in and go, look, here's the thing. It's so great that you're learning about the democratic process, but why stop at $150? Yeah.
get really
in people's faces about paternalistic things. Stay a year in jail.
Yeah.
So Girl Scouts get the worst lesson out of this. I also one of the council members, Charles Richardson, was working with the Girl Scouts to draft this. Quote, "I'm not a sentimental guy, but it gave me real renewed faith in the youth of our country." It's buddy, you're a sentimental guy. You helped a Girl Scout get nanny state regulations into a law.
I tend to disagree with that statement that you are not a sentimental guy.
Yeah. Cool. So shall we move on?
Yes. Well, our friends at Crikey sent through this morning.
My dear, dear friends at Crikey.
I love Crikey. They sent this through this morning. It was pretty funny, so we're going to chuck it in. It's in their section where they say they really said that, where it's a statement that's really funny made by someone this week or today. It was made by a little known politician called US President Donald Trump, who said...
I can't believe Crikey are covering what Donald Trump says.
I know. Nice guy. Good looking. This is Donald Trump said this. He was caught, audio from an event obtained by the Washington Post. He's saying this about Justin Trudeau. Nice guy. Good looking guy. Why would you say that?
But he is.
He's an absolute dreamboat. Oh, my God, we have to hang around less with each other. That's so weird. Nice guy, good-looking guy, comes in. Donald, we have no trade deficit. He's very proud because everyone else, we're getting killed. So he's proud. I said, wrong, Justin, you do. I didn't even know. I had no idea. So that's from audio obtained by the Washington Post. Crikey, right? Christ, this all stopped being funny so long ago. I'm going to disagree.
No, it's still funny.
That is funny. just an insight into Donald Trump's foreign affairs.
Yeah. To be a fly on the wall when Justin Trudeau and Donald Trump are talking about hardcore foreign affairs economic policy.
Just
two people who clearly have no idea what they're talking about back and forth.
Well, I want to know what Trudeau said, when he goes, actually, we do. Anyway.
Yeah. Cool. So that was a funny one. Now, I have one more I'm going to talk about here. So obviously, Stephen Hawking died this week. Really smart guy. Anyway, so Gal Gadot, obviously Wonder Woman actress, tweeted out, "Rest in peace, Dr. Hawking. Now you're free of any physical constraints. Your brilliance and wisdom will be cherished forever." Nice little statement, means a lot to her. But she has caught the ire of the Twitter brigade for being ableist, which, if you guys don't know, is when you're discriminatory against people with disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
That might be ableist in itself, calling it disabilities, but I didn't bother to check. So this is a sample tweet. Seems to be the one that people most got around. Adam B. Zimmerman tweeted back, "I think you're fantastic, Gal, but this tweet is very ableist. His physical constraints didn't stop him changing the world. People with disabilities don't wish for death to be free of their challenges. We wish to be valued for what we can do, not pitied for what we can't." I don't think Gal said anything about that. I don't think Gal said, "I can't believe this guy with motor neuron disease did anything at all, let alone the theory of everything." But
what is wrong with saying, "I wish you didn't have motor neuron disease"?
Yeah, exactly. It's obviously motor neuron disease didn't stop Stephen Hawking doing what he did, but it didn't help either.
Yeah, it's
it was a physical constraint. He can't walk.
It was a pretty horrific thing that he had to go through.
Yeah.
And he probably wished he didn't have to go through it.
Twitter is just such a sewer for this sort of stuff. If Gal Gadot is saying physical constraints ruins your day, reassess so many things about your life.
Yeah.
That is my big tip to Adam B. Zimmerman.
No, fair call.
But he did get 3,500 Twitter likes, so yeah. I've never got that before, so maybe he is onto something.
Yeah, well, good on him.
Good on him. Pete, do you have anything more?
No, that's it.
Cool. That's it for me as well. Thank you guys so much for listening. Thank you guys so much for downloading. We are available on iTunes, SoundCloud, and our website. And also, hey, what did I miss? Email. So make sure you guys are subscribed on any of the platforms you prefer to listen to us on. Make sure you guys are leaving us a comment. Obviously, you can leave a comment if you leave a review on iTunes. Make that a 5-star review just for your mates. And you could also email us any tips you have for the show, any feedback you have, or tell us how great we are. We always love those emails in particular.
Very rare, those ones.
Yeah. Mainly just us sending it to each other. Yeah. Good job today, Pete.
Good on you, James.
Cool. So, yeah, that's it for us. So, Nina, do you want to talk membership as a membership coordinator for the IPA? Manager?
Director.
Director.
Junior Vice President.
Overlord. Supreme Commander?
Yeah.
Whatever. Warlord. Whatever you want to call me. I just
respect. Nina's spent an hour with us and she has wearied of our antics.
Yeah.
Well, if you like us, you like this podcast, you like what we've done, well, you like what dance reports and everything, you can still support us as becoming a member. Just visit our website, ipa.org.au, and click on that join button. And starting as low as $22 a year, you can will become a member for a year, and you'll receive 4 free copies of IPA Reviews magazines and also weekly emails. Hey, what did I miss?
Very cool. All right, awesome. See you guys next week.
See you later.